This podcast does not constitute medical advice. All changes surrounding medications, diet, and exercise should be made in consultation with a professional who can assess your unique health circumstances.
Welcome to the Rheumatoid Solutions Podcast with Clint Pattison, helping you to live an easier, healthier, and happier life.
Today, my guest has tremendous experience in reversing psoriatic arthritis and psoriasis. And so we're going to go deep into those topics and learn from him. And he's going to share you all that he's done to alleviate joint pain, to get rid of the inflamed scaliness that comes with psoriasis, and just have some fun doing it. He's from Maine in the northern US region, and his name's Sean. G'day, Sean.
Hey, Clint.
Mate, give us sort of some before and after situation here, as we like to do, to our listeners or viewers to say, wow, this is amazing. I want to listen to this. So like a TV commercial, what was your before and after here?
So my before, in as brief as I can make it, I think it was around eighth grade, I developed pretty bad psoriasis on my scalp. And on a somewhat side note, I do feel like it was around a time where I had some dental surgery, and I think that there were probably some antibiotics involved in that, and it was the same time period. So eighth grade, I must have been 13 years old, I think. I ended up having really bad psoriasis on my scalp, and fortunately at that point, I figured out that I could shave my head down, and as long as I got sunlight on my head, the psoriasis seemed to go away. And then it wasn't until a couple of years later, probably around my late teens, I started developing, it has a particular name, but it's basically psoriasis underneath my fingernails. And pretty immediately, and coincidentally, I had a second dental surgery right around that time. And as my fingers would succumb to the psoriasis, they would immediately become inflamed with psoriatic arthritis. And it was basically just the tip, the final digit on each finger. And then throughout my 20s, it, like, one finger after another just kind of kept going. And I got to the point where I had, you know, 8 out of 10 fingers all had the combination of psoriasis and arthritis as well. And then it just, you know, kind of kept going. I got it in my wrist pretty bad. And that was around a time where I discovered that nightshades were playing some part of it, because removing nightshades seemed to help my wrist pain. You know, it didn't really help fully everything else, but I could tell. And I just felt all along that food had something to do with it. I couldn't pinpoint it, but I just in my gut knew that it had something to do with food. And I also just initially, after I developed the arthritis in my fingers, I saw a rheumatologist. And as most of them say, he didn't have any idea how I got it. None of my family had ever had it. Basically, there was nothing I could do about it except be on these drugs for the rest of my life. And I kind of see myself as an all natural kind of guy. And I just chose not to take the medications. I think I want to say fortunate on a certain level, because it was just in my hands, that I wasn't, you know, crippled in my knees, or like I didn't have it severely bad. So I think on a certain level that was good. But I think in the long run, I do have some long-term joint damage from not getting that inflammation under control sooner. But basically around 4 years ago, it got so bad, my fingers, I couldn't close my hands. I had it in my knees, my neck, my shoulder, my feet. And I had to make a major, major change. And I originally stumbled across Dr. Furman and his kind of approach, which was pretty intense at first. Little did I know, but he recommended the no oil thing, plant-based, no oil. And I didn't really buy into the no oil thing. That took me a while. But, you know, and this is a little bit of a side note, but I knew as soon as I went on the plant-based, I was like, oh, I can eat lots of veganaise. Like, I really liked veganaise, you know. And I was using that like a dip. I was eating so much of it, you know, and little did I know, it was just pure oil. And believe it or not, after I made the switch to plant-based, I got another, my big toe got flared up, which I'd never had any psoriasis in before. So I actually got worse before I got better. But at that point, I just believed in it and I kept doing my research and I stumbled across your program and it just clicked for me. Everything about it just made sense to me. It sounded great. And I've been wanting to tell you this for a long time, but I sat down to that first bowl of quinoa and buckwheat with bok choy and I literally cried right then and there because I just felt so confident that here is some food that I know that I can eat that is not going to make me worse. I didn't even know it was going to make me better at that point, but I knew it wasn't going to make me worse. And I just believed it and I just bought in. And so that was about 4 years ago. And I'd say, you know, this is another important part is after about a year, I was doing so good. I was at about 80% healed. And we went on a vacation and we went to Disney World. And I was just like, I'm going to still be kind of picky, but I definitely went off the diet. And it was about a 9-day vacation. And I remember after about 8 days of eating, you know, a lot of food that I shouldn't have been eating, I was like, I have no pain. Like I thought I'm healed. I think I'm healed. And sure enough, on day 9, I started noticing, you know, a little bit of psoriasis kind of coming under my fingernail. And then it all just came storming back. I mean, it was as bad as it was in the beginning. And I'd say it took me a good year to get back on track after that big fallout. And so today it's been so probably a good 2 or 3 years since that happened. And it's just every day is better. You know, I'm not going to say it's just better, better, better without some dips and bumps in the road, but the progression is always better. It's always upwards. You know, it probably looks like this, but it's going up, but there's ups and downs as it's going up. And I've never felt this good in my life. I never knew it was possible to feel this good. I remember you were very much talking about your energy levels and wanting to have energy. And I didn't really get that. But now I'm just like, oh my gosh, I didn't even know it was possible to feel this good and have this much energy to the point where I'm currently doing like ultra marathons and triathlons and all kinds of stuff that I never even envisioned doing because I've just had so much energy and I kind of maybe went too far with exercising every day, but the more I exercised, the better shape I got. And the more, you know, it just kept spiraling to the point where I'm like, well, I'm going to do something with all of this and see what I can do. You know, at 45, I'm out there and I'm pushing my limits and everything is going really great. And I owe it all to your program, to the advice and knowledge that you've given me.
Oh, that's amazing. That is truly amazing. So now when you wake up in the morning, how do your hands feel, the fingers that were most affected? Are you able to close your hands? Are you able to, you know, witness some, some nice clean skin under those fingernails? I mean, where are you at sort of with that?
Like I said, I'm probably at like 95%. I think, you know, there's probably some progression that you're familiar with where I think like that first 50% comes pretty fast. And then to get that second 50%, it just takes time. But I knew a couple years ago, I had that feeling. I'm just like, I'm going to just give this time. I bet in like 5 years, I'm going to be completely healed. I'm going to have like no pain, no symptoms. And I'm on that track. I mean, I can't say that I'm 100%, but I really feel like I'm like 95%. And my psoriasis just keeps getting better and better and better and better. And my arthritis is almost non-existent at this point. I think, like I said, I had it for 30 years or so without taking any medications. So I think there is some joint damage there that, you know, my knuckles are still a little bit misformed. And I had it really bad in my wrist. That was the last huge bout that I had. And I do want to come back to that or put a pin in that, as you like to say, because there's something I want to say about that. But you know, that's probably the only, like my wrist is like, I like to work out at the gym and stuff like that. And that's the one thing where I think I just have some permanent joint damage there. It's no inflammation. I mean, you know, I couldn't even set my wrist on a table. It hurt so bad and I could easily just touch it and it hurt. Now I just, dig in there and I can't find any pain anywhere. You know, as hard as I try, it's gone. I mean, it's totally gone.
So awesome. Let me just, I've made some notes as you talked here, just for people who are listening and, you know, making some mental, okay, yep, interesting. And here are my observations and comments here. First of all, isn't it interesting that the sunlight on your head seemed to reduce the psoriasis? Now, let me just direct everyone to a presentation on a YouTube channel called MedCram. Everyone should check out MedCram, M-E-D-C-R-A-M. It's on YouTube. There is a recent, let's say a four-month-old video that's been posted by the doctors who run that particular channel. And it's called Sunlight and Healing, or Sunlight and Inflammation, something along those lines. It is an hour and a half long presentation that is intended at a medical level. It is a very, very detailed presentation about the mitochondrial benefits from getting near infrared radiation from the sun, and also the vitamin D discussions around supplementation and so on. So, but anyway, so much content in there. It's fascinating. The point that I'm making, drawing from that video, is that infrared radiation from sunlight can penetrate up to 8 centimeters into our body.
Wow.
Right. Now, the benefit of that is it triggers intracellular melatonin. Melatonin being what we normally get from our glands at night to keep us rested and as an antioxidant. And that's the main point. It's a massive antioxidant. And so our body can produce antioxidant capacity from sunlight during the day to reduce oxidative stress that occurs inside the cells. And it's oxidative stress that is in combination with our microbiome imbalance that contributes to inflammatory arthritis and, I believe, psoriatic arthritis and psoriasis and so on. And so what I think is going on there is that the cells near the skin or around that area are receiving this antioxidant from melatonin that's being produced from the infrared radiation that's coming from the sun, and it's settling it down because oxidative stress and inflammation go hand in hand. So that is my humble opinion on what may be happening with that. And I got to tell you, and this is a funny little inside, Sean, is that I am gray on the top and sides of my head where I wear a hat. On the back of my hair where my hat doesn't cover, it's dark. All my hair is dark at the back, right? And so I've had this suspicion that is unconfirmed from any science I can find that the solar radiation that hits under the hat that doesn't get covered is helpful to keep the hair healthy. And only through recently watching that presentation I've just described to you, I think maybe it's the antioxidant capacity that's being generated from not the sunlight, but from the infrared radiation. Anyway, that's point number one.
Love it. I love the sun. I mean, it's cold all the time, but anytime I'm in the sun, I crave it for sure.
So there is so much to it than what we realize. Isn't it interesting that you would think that you want to consume oils when you have something that's skin flakiness and so on, wouldn't you? You'd think, I need to put oil into my body because I want oily skin to reduce the flakiness. And it just doesn't work in a linear fashion. There's no direct correlation like that. It's much more complicated. So I can understand why he's reluctant to give up the oil. So another point.
On that note, I do think I've done a lot of dermatological research as well, and come across many dermatologists that say, don't shampoo your hair, don't use soap and stuff like that. And so I've gone that route as well. I mean, I have long hair. I haven't washed it in a very long time. And it's the natural oils that you want. They're actually protective and help your skin. So
that's interesting, because we just had, there was a kid at our school in the kindergarten class who had nits or head lice or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And of course, then it catches to other kids, and our little girl, she had one or two in her hair, and my wife freaked out. Oh, we've never had this before. Anyway, the whole family, we had to go and keep washing our hair 3 times with this anti-lice stuff.
Yeah.
I never saw anything wrong with my hair, but I've been washing it too. Now the skin is dry and I've got like a dandruff thing going on from. So these products.
There's something there.
Yeah, there's something there. So I'm just excited by you sharing. And then isn't it interesting that it took 8 days at Disney World? The cumulative effect, it's not just from the little bit, it's the chipping away, it's the poking the tiger until finally, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I feel that way with a lot of foods. I'm still, you know, I'm still very careful and but I know that there's certain foods like tofu, for instance, is a food that I absolutely love tofu. I feel like I can eat it once and be okay. But if I eat it multiple times in a row, then I start to have some troubles with it. So I think there is some kind of accumulation factor there.
Yeah, absolutely. And people will find that with oats when they start to try and eat oats or oats for breakfast, which, by the way, I think is a key milestone that we all should end up eating oats for breakfast at some point. Do you eat oats for breakfast?
That's all. I've eaten oats every day for 4 years, probably for breakfast. Satisfying. You know, I don't get tired of it ever. It's just, it's fabulous.
That's it. What people may find, I'm not sure if your experience was this, but when you first start eating it, it's like, I'm not sure about that. And after a few days, you think, I'm not sure. And so sometimes it's a little give and then take a break. And then eventually your microbiome becomes adapted to the foods you're eating. And then the microbiome says, I know what to do there. Boom, metabolize that. Boom, no issue. And then you can have them every day.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. And then we're going to go all you in a minute, my friend, after I finish these notes here. That was pretty much it. I've made a note about the wrist. We'll come back to the wrist. So okay. Tell us, like, this huge health kick has been done in parallel to exercise. So talk us through your exercise development progression to ultra marathon. You're kidding me.
Yeah, I've always been, you know, reasonably. I wasn't active as a kid. I probably wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I really started enjoying sports. And I started playing basketball, just like pick up basketball. And I had no idea what I was doing. I'd never been coached or anything like that. But I really started enjoying basketball. And then I remember reading somewhere in my late 20s that was like the best or the last time that men had to pack on muscle or something like that. So that got me into the gym and I started going to the gym again, you know, having no idea what I was really doing. But until I was probably about, you know, after I started the program, that was kind of my routine, was just playing some sports here and there and going to the gym a couple days a week. I'd run a little bit. I never ran more than like a mile or something at a time. And then in like 2019, which was probably a couple years into the program, I ran a 5K race. My local town here had like five different 5K races throughout the summer. And I did the first one and loved it and signed up for the rest of them and did the rest of them. And that kind of got me hooked on running. And then the next year was 2020. So the pandemic kind of shut all that down, but I did sneak in my training and lockdown, I discovered running on trails. I just like, wow, I really like running on trails. It's just something about it. It's like dancing and exercising and all these fun things. And I got my music going and it's really enjoyable. So it brought me a lot of joy doing that. So I did a trail race and did really well at that and loved it and proceeded to try to bump it up. And then all the other races I signed up for proceeded to get canceled, of course. And then I ended up the next year doing a marathon. And after that, I was in just such good shape. I was like, I'm going to try a triathlon. And I went out and borrowed somebody's bike. I'd never ridden a road bike in my life. Borrowed a bike and went out and did this triathlon. And, you know, it was hard. Like the swim part of it was really rough. I panicked. But then as soon as I got on that bike and I'm just pedaling and passing people, it was really fun. I loved it. So I did a couple more triathlons and then signed up for another long trail race that fall. And this year I've just been training all spring and I've got my first race coming up this weekend and I've got couple big ones planned for the rest of the year. So I'm really excited about it.
Man, I'm excited. I got goosebumps down the side of legs here listening to this. Mate, what about the preparation for the swimming? I mean, swimming's my nemesis. I just find it so challenging. I panic. Like you say, I get a few laps in and then I start to feel like I'm just below the level of oxygen coming into my body that I need to keep up what I'm doing. I need some coaching or something. It's also maybe a little in my head, my form, maybe fitness. I don't know. But I mean, how did you overcome that in the open water, or was it in a lap pool?
It was open water. It was my first one. I've always been confident. I've done tons of scuba diving and snorkeling and boating. So I've always been in the water. I did a little bit of training in the pool. So I thought I'd be good to go. And as soon as I hit that, you know, you have a wetsuit on too, which is really tight. And as soon as I jumped in the water was freezing cold and the wetsuit was tight and there was people all around you splashing. And, you know, I kind of started going, and then like halfway into it, I was just like, I started hyperventilating. I couldn't keep my face in the water. Fortunately, I was comfortable enough. I mean, it took me a minute where I was like, I'm actually panicking. I'm like, do I need to flag somebody down here or something? And then I kind of pulled myself together and flipped over on my back, and just, you know, I knew I could just do that and be safe. So I just kicked on my back and kind of went back and forth and somehow made it through. And I actually did three of them last year. And the second one, I did a lot more practicing and training in open water. And I still did the same thing. About three quarters of the way through, I finally figured it out. I was able to keep my head down and swim. And then the third one I did last summer, I was able to keep my head down and swim the whole time. So there's a lot of practice to it and a lot of just, you know, there's a lot of mental. Because I know exactly what you're saying. Like some days I'll go to the pool and it's just like, it's so hard to keep your face in the water. Because you said, you get that panic feeling going in your mind. But, you know, I've learned a lot of that is actually a buildup of CO2 as opposed to needing more oxygen. The buildup of CO2 is what makes your brain kind of panic. So you have to learn to just constantly be breathing out as much as you can before you take that quick breath.
I think you have nailed my issue with that, and it's something that I believe also. Yes, because I'm thinking I need to hold more air in. I'm not letting all that.
It's CO2 all about out. Blowing out the whole time.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I've got a great little insight from you there. Thank you. So, how do you feel after these runs? Do you feel? And that's a leading question. I'm sure I know the answer, but do you feel that these projects of high activity allow you to have a better health outcome or not?
I mean, I have to believe that, you know, I think, you know, the diet is obviously first and foremost, but I have to believe that the amount of exercise that I do on top of my diet is what has definitely pushed me to where I'm at now. I mean, I don't want to say that after I'm done with a long run, I feel great or anything like that. But I think what the real key with the plant-based diet and being somewhat athletic is that you just recover so fast. Like, so, you know, typically it would take me a couple of days to get over a big long run, but the next day I'm just ready to go. And I think that's kind of the, you know, like the game changers in documentaries like that, where they're showing how plant-based athletes can actually excel. And I think it doesn't necessarily make you better right there in the moment, but what it does is it makes you recover much faster because you're eating an anti-inflammatory diet, which just eliminates all that inflammation that would normally build up after hard exercise so that you're ready to go the next day. And therefore you can train more than your counterpart who's not on that diet. So then you can get more training in a small amount of period. But for someone like me, I've only been running for a few years. So someone that's got 20 years of running is still going to be a better runner than me, whether they're eating plant-based or not. But I think that's the key for me is just, it's like, I just recover. I try to, you know, one of the main things I do that you recommend is stop eating early. So I eat dinner and a little dessert and then I'm done for the night. So I try to get a good 12 hours of no eating in every night. And then just making sure I get like 7, 8, 9 hours of sleep every night. And between those two things, I just feel like that's what makes my recovery just, I mean, every day I work out every day, pretty much. I'll, you know, every couple of weeks I'll be like, all right, I better take a rest day here. But
yeah. And do you have a sort of a typical sort of a gym routine where you might work legs one day, upper body the next, maybe you might do cardio? I mean, what's your sort of approach?
Well, I've done all of it right now. I'm really shifting over the winter. I do a lot more gym training, lifting heavy weights. I mean, I was going, you know, I'm a skinny guy. So when I say I'm going big, it's not like what the big guys are doing in the gym. But for me, I mean, it's a lot of weight I'm doing. Is, you know, it's all about how much can I do and how many reps and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'm going hard doing big, heavy lifting over the winter. And then towards the spring, I gear much more into like the endurance. So now my routine is just every day I'm running, swimming, or biking. I try to get into the gym, but when I'm doing this much running, swimming, and biking, the gym really hammers me pretty hard. So I try to sneak in one or two gym sessions a week, but at least every day I'm doing one of those three sports, if not two a day.
I'm envious of you. I can't run anymore due to the damage that was done to my knee and progression and so on there. But, running is just the greatest. Running just fills you with elation. And my replacement for that now is cycling. And I've been cycling each morning. And I take my little son, who's 3 3/4 years old. He can still fit on the little seat that goes on the back of the bike. And we ride to the beach. I did it this morning. We ride to the beach. We ride back again. And it's just far enough to give those legs enough of a pump to be therapeutic and get my heart rate up enough. And he wants me to go as fast as I can when we're on the real safe flat stretches, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just exhilarating and it's so healthy. So, you know, I believe that once we can exercise, if we can take that to the limit that we can, and you are a great example of this, it's so protective. It is our ultimate insurance that we're putting into our body to prevent us from then being so delicate with our foods and feeling so immunoreactive to like a blueberry or something trivial, because we're just not fit enough.
Yeah. Yeah. I think two things on that, the cycling is 100%. I ended up, like I said, I live in Maine, so cycling isn't even an option for many months. So I bought one of those indoor trainers for my bike. And I've really never been a big cyclist, but I started using that thing. And I mean, it is for getting in good fitness, good exercise with little to no impact. It is a wonderful tool. So I'm with you on that. I highly recommend cycling for people that can't run for sure.
Let's talk about your diet and we'll transition across into this by talking about how do you fuel yourself for all this exercise. So that's question number one. Then we'll get into what's your go-to for anti-inflammatory in earlier stages when you were highly inflamed, which is a different dietary approach, a different emphasis on food. So let's talk about fueling your body first, and then we'll go anti-inflammatory.
Yeah, fueling it's a tricky one. But I mean, I eat a lot, but like I said, I eat oats for breakfast with, you know, berries, and I was kind of going a lot of nuts and down that route, but I've kind of pulled back, and I'll be perfectly honest. I mean, I don't have it fully dialed. It's a constant, you know, experiment really. So I'm just playing with things, and sometimes I'll add something and I'll take it away. And, you know, it's kind of hard to ever fully know whether something is, I don't ever have like immediate huge trigger flares on any foods, but when you just have that subtle pain that kind of comes and you don't know necessarily where it's coming from, I play around with that. But I tend to follow Dr. McDougall's example a lot of just like I eat a grain or a starch or something like that for a big bulk of the meal, and then I just try to eat as many vegetables as I can. I really like, you know, Dr. B, and I remember he said that the predictor of one of the predictors of good gut health is the amount of variety and how many vegetables and plants you eat. So I just try to like pile in as many vegetables as I can. So it's usually some combination of a grain or a starch and a bunch of vegetables. And then, you know, I try to listen to like Dr. Greger, throw some mushrooms in there, beans, you know, so I got beans. It's taken me a long time to get used to beans. That's something that is worth noting, but I've finally feel like I've become fully adapted and I can eat loads of beans and I don't have digestive issues or anything with them at all. So I try to get like most of my protein through that. And I've also figured out that I can use protein powder. That's been one of the things that has been on my radar. Like, can I date this? Is it bothering me? I don't know. And so I did want to also plug this a little bit. Was I did end up with a little bit of a psoriasis flare over the winter. And I spoke with Dr. Miller on the plant-based telehealth. And she recommended that I cut out gluten. And I was indulging in maple syrup quite a bit as a sweetener for like my oats and stuff like that. So she had me remove those two things. And I feel like it's making quite a difference. It's been a couple of weeks now. I think at some point I will experiment back with those foods. I think it is important that I was ingesting too much sugar. And on the note of fueling, I also kind of like broke the rules a little bit. I started using those little energy gel packets, which, you know, I right away when I was first, I was very opposed to them because I was like, they're not a whole food. I don't think I should do this. And then I ended up using one at some point and boy, it really works. I was like, wow, okay, this stuff works. So I kind of started using them quite a bit in my training and stuff. And I think that played a role in my psoriasis flare because the predominant ingredient in most of those is maltodextrin, which I, in doing some research on maltodextrin, it seems like it's not necessarily a great thing to be ingesting.
These things also can contain something called soy lecithin, which acts on the body just like a really high omega-6 oil, like a seed oil, like a safflower oil, sunflower oil, which is the worst for us with inflammatory arthritis. So you got to watch anything with soy lecithin in it. A few years ago, I recommended some lipospheric or liposome. I mix up those two words. There's two different ways of saying fat suspended vitamin C, right? And if that is soy lecithin as well, that's just bad news. So I retracted my guidelines around that. If you want to take vitamin C and you're not doing it with foods, then you just take ascorbic acid, just straight ascorbic acid. So anyway, those things. Look, I find the best pre-workout energy fuel source are medjool dates, just dates. Yeah. You know? They rock.
So part of what I have to do, and I'm doing these endurance, you know, efforts that are multi-hour efforts, is you have to actually eat while you're doing it. But that's the only way you can. And that's what made the gels really handy, was that it was just this really easy to digest thing. So my recent issues is just trying to figure out now, like, what are the best whole food ways of fueling myself for these runs? And dates have been a big one. And I've recently just discovered dried mango. It works really well. So now I just kind of just munch on those two things throughout my run, and I'm doing pretty well. It seems to work.
Awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. Now let's talk about anti-inflammatory foods. Things that you emphasized most to not just reduce joint pain, but let's talk also about the impact of psoriasis. And so talk to us about foods and those two areas.
Well, I think, you know, and this is the craziest thing, is like the baseline meal is like, I know if like that's all I ate, I would just heal myself entirely so fast. Why would I ever eat anything else? It's just such a hard thing. Like, why do we as humans, we need to like have this variety? We can't just eat the one things that, you know, I listened to one of your podcasts with one of the doctors, and you guys analyzed all the nutrients of the baseline. Yeah, it's like, that has everything you need. Like, you can totally live off that. And it's like, why don't I just do that? I don't know. But anyways, that's pretty much what I fall back on. I'd say at least a couple times a week. My big thing is sweet potatoes and broccoli. Like those two things together, they're just, that's my jam. You know, I eat, and I'll throw in, you know, depending on how I'm feeling. If I'm trying to fight some inflammation, I'll just eat those two things. And then depending on the level that I'm at, I'll throw in some mushrooms or greens or onions. Yeah, I try to eat all the like daily dozen, all those, get those all in. But the other thing that I really noticed at some point was quinoa and buckwheat in particular, like buckwheat just, you know, and I read that before, maybe it was, I can't remember when I came across it, but I've read it outside of your program that pseudo grains are very notorious for fighting inflammation. So I, for dessert, pretty much every night I make like a buckwheat waffle, and I used to use maple syrup on it. Now I just mash up a banana with some blueberries or something like that. And I use the little bit of protein powder. That's the other thing I was getting back at. was that I've now that I've cut out the gluten and the high sugars, I'm just kind of experimenting with the protein powder, and it's got a little stevia in it or something that gives it a little sweetness. So now I just kind of sprinkle protein powder on some of my stuff as an extra bit of sweetness, and it's just working great for me.
Let's talk about psoriasis in particular. Our pre-conversation chat, which went for about 4 minutes, is very, very short. You mentioned that you noticed some different behaving psoriasis activity to the arthritis. And you said basically arthritis is gone and the psoriasis has sort of a mind of its own. Let's tell us about your experience with the two and what you've observed.
Yeah. Well, like I said, originally the bulk of my psoriasis was on my fingernails, and that is just completely just steadily improved. It's never really taken a step back. It's only just gotten better and better and better. And over the winter, I just don't know. Like I said, I started ingesting a lot of those gels, but for some reason I ended up with a pretty good flare of psoriasis on my scalp again. And it was really, you know, when you know food's got something to do with it, sometimes it's so frustrating because you're just like, what could it be? You know, and then you just end up cutting things out and bringing things back. And I really, other than the sugar, but, you know, I was eating maple syrup for years and experiencing a lot of healing. And I don't feel like the only thing that I really changed was those energy gels. I also moved. I bought a house and moved and went through a pretty good bout of stress, not to mention just, you know, the pandemic. And I ended up getting divorced over the pandemic as well. So I've had a lot of kind of accumulating stress. And I'm not 100% sold on how much stress has to do with it. But if I really have to look deep down, like, that was the thing that was probably the biggest change in my life. So, you know, in wintertime, it's just really dark and cold here. And I think all of those things maybe kind of played a factor in this flare, but it's just been getting, you know, it flared and now it's just kind of, it's going away. It's taking its time. And that was one point I really wanted to make for the listeners, was that, you know, it's not a fast process. I mean, maybe it is for some people. And from what I've heard from your guests is the people that get it and then get on it the fastest are the ones that seem to like fully recover the fastest. And I think, like I said, having it for 30 years, I think it's just a much slower process for me. But I just can't emphasize enough that it's constantly getting better day after day. It improves and it improves. And it just, to the point where, you, like I said, I just never even knew you could feel so good. It's incredible.
Mm. So what else would you like to share? Is there something that you, well, let's talk about the risks. We've got that in our sort of to-do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the risks.
So the one thing that I also experienced was, you know, on the, speaking of the baseline diet in miso, I really fell in love with miso and was eating a lot of miso. And then that, like I said, after that relapse, I was trying to heal and man, my wrist just ballooned out. It was so painful. And I was down to the baseline diet with the miso. And I was like, what am I doing wrong here? I ended up cutting the miso out. And coinciding with that, I also changed my mental outlook to just be like, I'm going to stop giving it so much attention because it was taking up so much of my energy, just trying to figure it out. And why is it happening? And what am I eating that's causing it? So I decided to cut the miso out because I knew soy had kind of been, you know, back and forth with a little bit. And I just shifted my mental outlook and it went away. So I think I'm one of the few people maybe that miso is kind of a trigger for. I was using soy miso. I think, you know, I haven't tried the brown rice miso or any of those other
it's
things.
It's hard to find. It's just hard to find the brown rice.
It is.
Yeah, you might only get it in one in every five health food stores.
And a lot of them have soy in them already.
Correct. Yeah, they're a hybrid. Yeah. So, look, you know that you're so close to our content, what we say, everything that we teach. So, you know this, but the fermentation process tends to make the soy proteins non-immunoreactive because they've become their constituent amino acids. However, However, you know, our bodies are complex, and we don't know whether or not perhaps the iodine content, or there's so many other potential things going
Absolutely.
On. Here. It's a
Absolutely.
Mystery. It leave is. It out, feel better, therefore leave it out. I mean, it's that simple, right?
And what it boils down to.
Yeah. Risks. Get back. Yeah, let's talk risks. So
yeah.
Did you find any exercises that you found therapeutic, the beneficial things for your wrists? What are those?
I mean, I would say like just the running for some reason. I just feel like the running and just getting everything moving and flowing and getting the heart rate up, I feel like that was probably the most beneficial thing. I did, you know, I tried to do the exercises and other things like that. And I honestly, that was my other thing, was just like I said, mentally, I just had to just let it go and leave it alone. And I feel like as soon as I did stop giving it so much attention, it all just, I mean, it's almost a little blurry because I just did stop. I kind of just started ignoring it and it just kind of went away. I mean, I wish I had more productive tips to say, but I didn't do any wrist specific. I haven't really done, I mean, I always am just like moving, like you say, just in bed before I go to bed. I'm just always just getting them all moved and, you know, constantly moving my fingers and all of that. So yeah, that's probably my best advice.
Yeah. A couple of comments there. First of all, to the movement before bed, I have always believed in that strategy. I think that morning stiffness is just inactivity stiffness. I don't think anything happens during the night that's different than just a body lying there doing nothing. And the accumulative oxidation that's happening in the joints, because the immune system is active in the joints, creating free radicals. We're not clearing them out. We're not providing any compression into the cartilage through our synovial liquids, which provide the nutrients to the cartilage. So the joints are basically like sleeping is not a therapeutic thing for a joint. A joint likes movement. Yeah. And so if you've got a joint issue and then you don't move while you sleep, other than the body, you know, rest and repair as on a systemic level, I think that morning stiffness is just inactivity stiffness, because if you sit still on a plane on a long haul flight for 5 hours and then stand up, you hurt. You're hurt.
Absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got you're in an inflamed state. So that's the first thing. Moving before bed, what it does almost like starts the clock at the moment you lie down.
Definitely.
Rather than starting the clock of stiffness on the couch 2 hours before lying down, then you've added 2 hours of nothingness. But if you move all right before bed, boom, it's only at that one moment.
You're kind of lubricating them. You're getting whatever healthy fluids and stuff you need in there so that while you're resting overnight, you got, you know, that stuff is all in there, hopefully doing its job.
I love that. And then the other thing I was going to say about wrists, one thing that I found as well for fingers, right? You say that the best thing for your wrist was actually just not any particular exercise, but just cardiovascular activity.
Yeah.
That was the same, you know, back in the sort of 2011 period for me when I was going through the nightmarish levels. I would just find that working out my upper body, taking the weight in the palm, not in the fingers, but in the palm, so that I could lift weights or push resistance against a cable or something, that was the best thing for my fingers without actually exercising my fingers. So it was almost like a referral effect. It was the cardiovascular, the strength, the blood. And so I fully agree with that. The only thing I would add.
I got it from you.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh,
great. The other thing I would add is that hanging from an overhead bar seems to strengthen the forearms and just the connective tissue at the wrists. And is that something you've explored?
I've just, you know, pull-ups have always been a challenging exercise for me. So just because they've been challenging, I've tried to focus on them as much as I can. And I think, you know, one of the things that's worth mentioning too is like, I've never been a big overweight guy, but you know, I lost 30 pounds on this diet and I never would have ever thought I had 30 pounds to lose, but as soon as I lost some of that weight, all of a sudden I was like, well, I can do pull-ups now. And I've just really focused on doing lots and lots of pull-ups. So that must have probably improved it. But I remember you saying for sure that doing upper body workouts seemed to help with your hands and your inflammation. So I definitely keyed on that and started doing that. And then on top of that, like I said, with the running, like I remember at some point you saying also just like, if you're in an inflamed state, just go exercise. And if you just go do it, you know, get your heart rate up and do something, you will feel like you will make improvement. And it's 100% true. Like if I'm having a little bit of pain or something in my wrist or my hands, when I'm done working out, I don't have any pain. Like I feel, you know, whatever happens during the workout process, it really eliminates a lot of the inflammation. I don't think it's going to be long lasting if you're not following the diet and keeping up with all the other things as well. But definitely those two things. I mean, I think it's like 51-49 between diet and exercise. You know, I put a little bit more on the diet, but I have to think that the level of exercise that I've been able to achieve and accomplish plays a huge part in my healing. And then, you know, just on a side note as well, like I remember reading Dr. Furman's first book in his intro, I remember him talking about how like getting colds and flus and stuff were like he rarely ever got sick, you know, and I was just like, immunity is so strong. It's like, yeah, everybody says that, but you know, I can say with a fact in the 4 years on this program, I have not had a sniffle, a flu, a cold, or anything. I feel like my immune system is just extremely prime. My daughter's here with her friends. They're sick. I got sniffly kids around me. And like I said, I have not gotten sick once. So the benefits of this diet reach far beyond just the joint pain. I mean, even if I still had joint pain, if I felt as good as I do, I would still do it. And then, you know, not to go too far off track, but the environmental and the ethical issues that I've discovered in being plant-based and going vegan, those reasons alone too, I would continue to do it even if it had nothing to do with my arthritis. So
well said, Sean.
You've changed my life. I can't express that enough. I think you probably saved my life on some level at some point in my life. So I just can't say enough about how massively I support this way of living and what I think at this point, the majority of sickness and disease in our societies comes from our diet. And the minute you can figure that out, and I will 100% say it has been a massive challenge. It's not easy. I've had to relearn how to eat, how to cook, all of those things, but the results just speak for themselves and there's no way I would do it any differently.
Fantastic, Sean. Thank you very much for all the passion behind this. Thank you for sharing your story. And yes, Thank you for also getting behind us on social media. You know, when we post things on Instagram, you're often there and say, yeah, this worked for me. You can do it, and encouraging others. I appreciate that. That means so much to me because there are a lot of sort of skeptics and people who want to belittle what we do, and having you behind us, that really helps. So thanks very much.
It's so hard. I've got people that ask me how I did it and they have joint pain and they want to do it. And I tell them and they're like, oh, I can't do that. I couldn't do that. And it's so hard to convince people. But like once you get there and you start feeling the results, it's nothing short of magic, really. I mean, it's so incredible, but it's so hard to convince people to make that transition. And I'll fully admit I was in a desperate place. I had to reach a desperate place to go there, but I don't regret it at all. I only wish I'd done it sooner. You know, that's what I will.
Don't we all? We're all in that boat. We're all in that boat. Sean, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, and wishing you all the best, and let's stay in touch. I can't wait hear how you go on your upcoming this weekend triathlon or marathon, whatever may crazy thing you're up to. Thanks very much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Clint.
Thanks for listening to Rheumatoid Solutions. If you'd like to get more help to live an easier, healthier, and happier life, visit rheumatoidsolutions.com.